They would add to this their conviction that parapsychology was involved, that this was a science that was only beginning to be properly explored, and that the study of Arago would advance this science. Technically, all this was tissue-thin legally, and Figuardo knew it. The prosecutor had temporarily quit his job, which was the source of some comfort for the defense, but very little. The defense could do little but wait until the case came to trial months later in March 1957. On March 17, Figuardo had his chance to test his shaky theories. The defense witnesses testified well, and he pleaded simply and eloquently, in spite of the weaknesses of his case. In addition to Article 284, Arago was charged with several other chapters of the labyrinthine Brazilian Penal Code. The laws in Brazil are patterned almost entirely on ancient Roman law, and they contain many ambiguities. Facing the liverish judge saws, Figuardo immediately demanded that the case be dismissed on the grounds that charlatanism had not been proved and that on several occasions, he, as the defense lawyer, had not been notified when hostile witnesses had been heard. In these instances, neither he nor Arago had been able to present a defense. In addition, he insisted that the prosecutor at EMS leaving his job at the time made the trial automatically invalid. A further at EMS, Figuardo continued, a definite harm and danger to other people must result from the acts of the defendant. No harm whatever has resulted from Arago at EMS acts, and therefore it is quite plain that a crime does not exist at EMS. He was aware that Article 284 did not include such a provision, but there were other chapters in the law that did give this protection. He went on, it is impossible to call Arago a criminal. Aside from the fact that there is no crime, A, and even the adversary witnesses have agreed to this, A, Arago has been shown to be an honest and hard-working citizen, a responsible member of the community, who is 126, respected by all. Only one person has tried to call him a criminal, and that is the prosecutor of this court. He has failed to provide proof of such a charge, because no such proof exists at EMS. Figuardo then began moving on to less firm ground. He did so with great convolutional indirection and masterfully engineered eloquence. The only direct evidence that the court had been able to come upon was the one small slip of paper with Arago at EMS prescription written on it. It was unsigned. A. How can the prosecutor say that Arago gave out prescriptions, when all he has is one small piece of paper that is unsigned, and totally lacks proof that this comes from Arago? ATM, he asked. In spite of this flimsy physical evidence, there was hardly a newspaperman in Brazil who did not ATM know that Arago gave out literally hundreds of prescriptions a day. It was not exactly a worthy defense, but the attorney was grasping at straws. He had one more important point, however. In order to prove witchcraft, it was necessary to prove that a defendant had personally distributed concoctions of roots and herbs. This was clearly a thing Arago never did. Arago had prescribed only bona fide drugs from standard pharmaceutical houses, most of which were known throughout the world. The mystery was why these prescriptions worked when Arago issued them, when they failed to work for the ordinary doctor. One drug was known only in New York. It was in an experimental stage, and was hardly known there. Arago himself did not know how he knew about it. In pointing all this out, Figuardo continued by saying that drug stores all over Brazil often administered shots of penicillin and other drugs, a technically illegal act that was never brought before the courts. Why was Arago singled out? Reminding the judge that Article 284 prohibited the use of gestures or passes with the hands, Figuardo said, A, we want to ask the court to take into consideration this fact, that if gestures and passes can be judged as crimes in Brazil, then throughout the entire great Catholic Church, all the members of the clergy are committing crimes every 127 day. The priests constantly make gestures every time they pray. A what a TMS more a TM. The defense attorney went on, warming up now to new emotional heights. A we like to call everyone a brother because we are all sons of God. If anyone, anyone at all, came to Arago to ask for help because he was suffering, Arago would pick up a little cross, look high in the sky, hold his hand, and he would ask the good God to have compassion on his brother. This is what Arago wants to do. He wants only to help people. Tm. True as this was, Figuardo neglected to add that more often than not, Arago would also pick up a battered penknife and slice it expertly into the body of a patient. There was no need to remind the judge of this. He knew it well. We want to ask the judge, is praying for our brothers and wishing for their health a crime? Can it be so construed? If the judge says that this is a crime, we can draw the conclusion that all the innocent people are in jail, and all the guilty are out of jail. For do we not pray for the health and good of people? If this is a crime, we are all criminals. Tm. By now, Figuardo was piling it on a bit thick. He had little choice, in one sense. In strict legal terms, the case against Arago was cut and dried. If the obdurate judge could not see beyond the law, and into the unique and totally unprecedented values of the case, there was little a defense plea could do. The only possible track to take would be to ask for a suspended sentence, with a court order placing Arago in the custody of a group of competent medical doctors who would work with him in trying to unveil the mystery of his powers. No such defense was presented. With the judge Etm's hostile attitude already manifested, such a plea would likely be given short shrift. Realizing the weakness of his position, Figuardo concluded, if your honor does not accept these arguments, I ask one other request. Arago is a gentleman, from a good family, a fine father, and a loving husband. If these arguments fail to move you, may I ask that your decision be weighed by these considerations, and that the lightest possible penalties be imposed? Atm. 128, Church of the Bum Jesus in Congonhas do Campo with the statues by Elia J. Dino. View from the church. Street scene in Congonhas. Arago Atmsa Clinic Atm is in the center, the Hotel Freitas is next to it, and in the foreground, across the street, is the Farmacia S.A. Tilda Pound Dojas A. Tilda copyright where many of his prescriptions were filled. Henry Buharich, M.D., Wright, and Henry Belkin Arago Atm's backyard during their first visit in 1963. Views of the inside of Arago Atm's clinic Atm during Buharich Atm's and Belkin Atm's first visit. Arago is writing prescriptions with the same pen he used for 20 years. Opposite page and above, Arago operating with a kitchen knife. Dr. Buharich observed in his notebook, it was thought the patient at TMSI would be gouged out, but no pain was felt at TM. Below, Arago and villagers in front of Hotel Freitas. Operation by Arago on right forearm of Dr. Buharich to remove a lymphoma. Above, left, the arm immediately after surgery. Above, right, the arm 2 days after the operation. Below, the knife used and the excised lymphoma. A magazine article by Jorge Rini about the Buharich operation. The story was also carried by nearly every newspaper in Brazil. Top, the highly unconventional prescription Arago gave Henry Belk for his back condition. The writing on top is Arago Atm's. Above, Altimiro, Arago Atm's longtime assistant. Members of the American medical team in 1968 conducted a complete physical examination of Arago, including brainwave tests with an egg instrument. The pictures on pages 12-16 were made from their 16mm motion picture taken by the American medical team. Arago cutting out a scalp tumor. A close-up of Arago Atm's hands writing a prescription. Top, patients waiting to see Arago in his A clinic Atm. Middle and bottom, Arago performing eye surgery. Arago removing a cataract. In their last picture he is comforting their patient. Page 1 of a Rio de Janeiro paper, January 12, 1971, the day after Arago was killed. His death was front page news all over Brazil. Tarcísio, Arago Atiemes' son, at his father Atiemes' grave 2 years after his death. Arlit de Freitas, Arago Atiemes' widow, in center of family group, including 3 of his sons. The plea finished, the case rested. Headlines all over Brazil brought a harsh spotlight on the case. It did not please the duo Judge Soares to have this happen. Readers flooded the newspapers with well-meaning letters in Arago Atiemes' defense. One housewife wrote to the Diario de Minas, "A my husband was given up by the doctors. He had a perforated ulcer. He went to Arago, who operated on him. Today, he is completely well. Arago said he didn't attempt to do anything for him, it was God. But my husband wants to thank Arago publicly in this newspaper, because Arago was the only person who gave him back his health. Arago gave him back his dreams, after the doctors and science told him that they could do nothing whatever more for him atm. It was a splendid testimonial. But it amounted to one more witness for the prosecution. Without insight on the part of the court, Arago was trapped." J. Herculano Baez, the prominent professor of philosophy, wrote his opinion vigorously in the press. "It is simply ridiculous atm," he wrote, "a to deny that the phenomenon of Arago exists. It is also completely unscientific to state that Arago is a paranoid or a psychotic of any kind. Medical specialists, famous journalists, intellectuals, prominent statesmen, and those who have been cured from hopeless conditions, have all had ample chance to witness the phenomena at Congonhas do Campo. These simply cannot be denied or misrepresented. If no formal scientific committees have been organized to verify the many cases, there have been many verifications by many reliable scientists individually. Among these are the medical testimonies given at court. To deny the paranormal capacities of Arago is simply an act of utter stubbornness. We may want to examine Arago critically. We may desire to severely limit his activities, as several doctors on the witness stand have testified. What we cannot possibly deny is the total reality of his feat, and his complete sincerity atm. When defense attorney Figueiredo filed an addendum to his plea, on March 17, 1957, his arguments far exceeded the scope of his first brief. The problem with the entire case 129, was that both sides were trying to deal rationally with the irrational. The court held the upper hand, because it was already set in a harness that kept the proceedings on a tight legalistic bridle path. Any literal interpretation automatically spelled Arago Atiemes' doom. The only question was whether some spark might disturb Judge Soares atm. Clogged to the point where he would allow special consideration. Arago could, for instance, be given a minimal sentence, which could then be suspended in favor of putting him in the care of medical scientists. Figueiredo did everything but handsprings and a tumbling act to push the judge in this direction. The ability of a healer, even if illegal, has to be taken into account, Figueiredo pleaded in his new brief. The wealthy and the prominent would never stampede to Arago Atiemes' humble clinic, as they were doing, unless he had ability. Arago was obviously more than able, he was super able. Arago accomplishes what he does without even knowing he is doing it. He is not responsible for these acts, as benevolent as they are. The Catholic Church acknowledges the validity of parapsychology. The only possible solution to the problem is to set up a scientific study at the court atm's direction. Arago helps only those that the medical world cannot help. He acts through an invisible element that is possessing him, helping other people for God. The Catholic Church recognizes the reality of possession. In Arago Atiemes' case, this is benign possession. Arago does his work without incantation or screaming. He practices none of the ritual of low spiritism, of the umbanda and quimbanda ilk. Arago believes that the spirit of Dr. Fritz is the spirit of Christ. He believes that he must act to do everything through the light that God has given him. He wants us to become less materialistic, more spiritual, and to be parascientific. Arago does not attempt want or ask for this spirit that possesses him. The defense attorney went on. In fact, He willingly fought it with the help of doctors and psychiatrists, who pronounced him normal otherwise. His gradual trend towards spiritism is protected by the Brazilian constitution. It is a legitimate religion, protected against attack by public authorities. 130. The only thing he has done is to give people who have their days numbered, their lives back. People whom modern science has given up. He helps them without charge or harm, and is the exact opposite of a criminal. Figueiredo continued with quotations from the Latin poets, from William James, from Conan Doyle, from Pope Leo XIII. He concluded with words from St. Paul, to the effect that he who judges his brother is judging himself. It is doubtful that in all the history of jurisprudence there has been such a strange and twisted brief. Actually, though, it matched the intricacies of the trial itself. Throughout the plea, Judge Saws sat like a sphinx, frozen in time and space, and faced with almost arcane imponderables just as everyone else was. The plea failed to make a dent in the fatal dissection aid of either Judge Saws or District Attorney Neto, now back in harness again to complete the case. Nor did the last-minute appearance of the Secretary of the Treasury for the State of Minas Gerais, who voluntarily appeared in Arrigo-Atiemes' defense. He told the judge that he had witnessed Arrigo remove a cancerous growth from a friend who had been given up as hopeless, and that a group of the finest doctors in the state had confirmed the condition, the operation, and the full recovery. On March 26, 1957, less than 10 days after Figueiredo Atiemes' last-ditched stand, Arrigo was summoned before the court. With him was Arlette, this time her hair neatly in place, his father and mother, and friends and well-wishers who packed the small courtroom to its minuscule capacity. Newsmen and photographers scrambled as best they could for a vantage point, to record the final decision. Arrigo was ushered to a wooden chair in front of the judge. He was wearing a black suit and a necktie. In the heat of the courtroom, he opened his collar and loosened the tie. He sat with folded hands and waited for the judge to speak. He was quiet and subdued, a sad and very lonely figure, his shoulders slumped in resignation. As the judge reached the bench, Arrigo Atiemes' eyes again clouded. He looked, his friends reported, just as he always did at the times that Dr. Fritz was said to enter into him, in an indefinable 131, trance state that wiped out his crude and jovial personality. But instead of being commanding and Germanic, he was passive and unseeing. The judge, his bearing stern and unyielding, briefly reviewed the case. The defendant had admitted his wrongdoing before the court. The witnesses, both of the defense and the prosecution, had substantiated the charges. In fact, the strongest witness for the defense, Dr. João Ranulph de Mello, had offered the most damaging evidence against the defendant. He had admitted to watching several operations. Arrigo would still be guilty, even if he were not aware of what he was doing, even if he were possessed by this strange spirit. Nothing in philosophy or religion can defend Arrigo. The law is not interested in this in the slightest. The only issue at hand is to apply the penal code, which is very specific. Arrigo has been committing crimes, and he is guilty. He is not excluded because he is a mystic or a medium or an idealist or a charitable person of good standing. In the eyes of the law, Arrigo is a criminal. The courtroom was hushed and silent. Arrigo, still in his trance, did not respond at all. He stared vacantly into space, his bulky form hunched in the chair. The sobbing, beginning with Arlette, spread throughout the gallery. The judge rapped for order. Then he said, "I hereby sentence you to 1 year and 3 months in jail, effective immediately as of this day. I further levy on you a fine of 5,000 cruzeiros, plus all the court expenses, the same to be paid within 3 days, by March 29, 1957 a.m. The decision was unbelievably harsh. No one had expected anything like this. Arlette broke down and had to be ushered from the room. Some of the sobs elsewhere broke into open crying. This was augmented by hostile murmuring among the men. Arrigo continued in his trance. He failed to respond at all. His lawyer leapt to his feet, protesting that the terms were incredible, that he was asking for an immediate appeal, that the sentence must be stayed, and that the fine and costs were totally out of reason. Arrigo had a wife and family to support, and the amount levied came to almost an entire 132-year TMS earnings for Arrigo at the Personnel and Welfare Office. With obvious reluctance, the judge said that he would grant a stay until April 1. Regardless of any appeal, the fine would have to be paid by that date. Figueiredo, furious, faced the judge and said, I remember a prayer I learned when I was studying law. It said, oh dear God of grace, is this a dream or is it the truth that so many horrible things can happen in front of Goda TMS eyes? ATM. The judge turned and left the room. Figueiredo took Arrigo by the arm and led him out of the court. Among the spectators, many of whom had not moved from their seats, there was still the sound of crying. 133.7. There were two places in the village where news traveled most swiftly, the barber shop of Fernando dos Santos and the railroad station. But that day every street corner, store, and bar was abuzz as the news of Arrigo's TMS sentence swept through Congonhas do Campo. Judge Soares remained as inconspicuous as possible. He was the enemy of the people. The tone of TMS mood was like that of a mutinous vessel at sea. Even those who felt that Arrigo should be curbed rose up against the utter harshness of the decision. Dissidents within the Catholic Church rose to a high level. The state medical society was splitting at the seams. Both the church and the medical society had stayed in the background during the trial. This fooled hardly anyone. Most knew that both organizations were lustily behind the prosecution, if not the cruelty of the sentence. The Spiritists in town immediately rallied behind Arrigo. With fresh support from unexpected quarters, they raised the inordinate fine that had been levied on Arrigo by the court. Arrigo, calm in his hour of despair, urged his fellow townsmen to keep cool heads. He stubbornly insisted that the court must be forgiven. Figueiredo and his staff lawyers rushed swiftly to appeal, reiterating their arguments, technically weak as they were. Attorney Figueiredo appealed directly to the Minister of Justice of the state with an impassioned plea to spare Arrigo from total ruin. The prosecutor countered this by declaring Arrigo guilty to the teeth, and accusing him of base political motives. He was relentless in his charges, to the point where many suspected a personal vendetta. It took 2 months for the decision to come down from the Court of Appeals. Arrigo and his supporters waited anxiously for the results. When the decision came through, it was not good. The higher court upheld the conviction, but ruled that the sentence was too harsh under the circumstances. The jail term was reduced from 15 months to 8, and the fine considerably cut back. Most important, 134, there would be a little more than a year at TMS grace before beginning the jail term, provided Arrigo remained on probation in the custody of the court. In spite of the breathing spell, the specter of going to jail and leaving his family hung over Arrigo's TMS head. The terms of the custody were almost as confining as prison. He would immediately have to stop treating patients. He could not move anywhere or leave town without the authorization of the judge. He had an early curfew. He could not go into any hotel, cafe tilde copyright, or restaurant, or sit at any outside tables in any of these locales. He could not consult with any strange person from out of town in his or any other house. He would have to get the permission of the judge to attend any spiritist meeting. He would have to report to the judge at the end of each month. He was further warned that the police were going to keep their eyes on him, wherever he went and whatever he did. He literally became a chattel of the court. Arrigo seemed like a lost man. He went to his job at the pension office, continued with his real estate work, tended his roses, played with his young sons, and he still went to mass with Arlette, but unlike her, he did not take communion. He would have until the middle of August 1958, before he could be sent off to jail, like any ordinary criminal. Arlie tried her best to comfort him, again took in sewing to buttress their income, in preparation for the time when she would be left without support. The year went by slowly. But the following May, 1958, it was obvious that the little savings they had put aside from Arletea TMS sewing work would be totally inadequate to tide them over the long months Arrigo would be spending in jail. The children had now increased to 6, all of them boys and under the working age, all of them needing food, shelter, and education. In addition to the worries about what would happen to his family, Arrigo TMS' compulsion to serve the sick was almost too much for him to bear. The entire complexion of the town had changed. No longer did the buses full of patients rumble into the narrow streets from Belo Horizonte, Rio, S.A. tilde Pando Paulo, or far away Argentina the last an event that had become almost a weekly routine. Arrigo rankled under the terms imposed on him by the court, but he had nothing to say against his enemies. His headaches returned again, as they always had when he tried to stop before. While he forswore his operations, he gradually began seeing those who sought him out for help, keeping this as inconspicuous as possible. The police knew immediately that he was beginning to resume non-surgical treatments, but they looked the other way. Nearly all were friendly to him. They were aware, too, that he had little freedom left, as the starting date of the jail term approached. The last 2 months before the jail term were the hardest for Arrigo and Arlette. There was nothing to look forward to but despair. In Rio, President Juscelino Kubitschek had his hands full, with a plethora of problems. The critics of the building of Brasilia, in the remote state of Goiás, were vociferous in their condemnation of it. But the new capital was already rising in sparkling majesty in the middle of nowhere, some 600 miles from Rio, S.A. tilde Pando Paulo, or Salvador rather three nearest metropolitan centers. It was a concept of planned urban creation that had no parallel anywhere in the world. Kubitschek knew it, reveled in it. Its striking modern architecture was dramatic, breathtaking and expensive. Determined to have the city finished before his five-year, non-repeatable term was up, Kubitschek poured money, sweat, and dreams into it, even to the extent of air freighting heavy construction materials. The new city was sprouting like a mirage out of the reddish screw-blown waste of the Coantria TMS empty center. It was a glorious obsession for Kubitschek and architect Oscar Niemeyer. To their opponents, it was an impossible drain on the economy. Kubitschek had other troubles and preoccupations, the threat of a coup by the military, an unprecedented program for economic growth, and a new highway system that was to outdistance all the progress made since the country began. With inflation on the rampage, the military restless and hostile, and the treasury groaning under the new burdens, Kubitschek had little time to put his mind on anything but the affairs of state. But in May 1958 President Kubitschek learned that Arrigo was waiting for the axe of the jail sentence to fall on his neck. Kubitschek lost no time going into action. Within minutes, a presidential pardon was dispatched to the Congonhas do Campo authorities. It stated that as President of the Republic, Article 87, Number 19 of the Constitution gave him the power to pardon José tilde copyright Pedro de Freitas, more commonly known as Arrigo, and that the defendant was to immediately be relieved of his jail sentence by presidential order. The official pardon was received by the Dura prosecutor Alfonso Neto on May 22, 1958. For reasons that were never explained, the pardon lay fallow in the office of the prosecutor, without any action being taken on it. It continued lying there, as the time for the jailing grew closer. It wasn't TMT until July 29 that Prosecutor Neto saw fit to pass the news of the pardon along to Judge Sawles. It wasn't TMT until August 6 that the judge saw fit to pass the news along to Arrigo. With the sword of Damocles removed, there was great rejoicing through most of Congonhas do Campo. The jubilance was not confined to the town, it spread through Brazil and into Argentina. Arrigo, who had been continuing to experience his strange symptoms and headaches since he had stopped or reduced his healing work to almost nothing, began to pick up the threads. The buses began to roll into the town again, and the patients began to line up at the center. Arrigo, who never could refuse anyone who came to him for help, fell back into the routine. Within a month, the volume of patients had returned to an almost normal figure of over 300 a day. But with one eye on the police, Arago did not perform any major operations.